I'm Elizabeth Barrett, wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And I come to you every Tuesday at 2 to talk about those things that I assume most of us grapple with in this weekly conversation. And we're coming to the last week of BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month. And that also means that it's our last week with guest hosts David Goodiel and Aliyah Sade. It's been my pleasure to share the microphone with them this month and to get their perspectives as Gen Zs, activists, recent college graduates, engaged couple, and BIPOC members. And today we're going to kind of wrap things up by pushing the conversation to more of a a national conversation that is affecting us locally, because I think, like all of you, we're caught up in what's happening in the protests nationally and locally, and to see how things have kind of ramped up in different areas of the country, what we're seeing in Portland and with federal officers being brought in, and what's happening in Washington and the ongoing conflicts here in the county. And it's overwhelming because there is so much energy behind the protests, the activists who are engaged in peaceful, nonviolent protests, some that are caught up with a lot of energy and acting out, being more aggressive in their protests. And one of the kind of consistent messages that seems to be coming up from different parts of the conversation is, what is it that the protesters want? What is it they're asking for? What is it they're trying to accomplish? And there are a lot of different feelings about the way the protesters are behaving. Some feel like they should be more polite and be more courteous to each other and to the government officials. Some believe that they're not being aggressive enough, that unless you move forward and put yourself out there on the streets, blocking traffic and making noise, no one's going to notice that you're there. And everyone seems to agree that we are long overdue for change, change in many different areas, from social justice to gender justice, economic justice, environmental justice. There is a list of issues that have gone not unaddressed, but unresolved for far too long. And when I was thinking about the show for this week and talking, you know, with David and Aliyah about kind of what is the focus, what kept coming up for me is that the one thing all of these protesters and these movements have in common is that they're fighting against what is the current social norms, what is what we consider the expectations of our corporately pushed culture, our capitalistic culture. You know, we like to say that we're a democracy and that everyone has access to all of the opportunities. But what we're finding more and more is that, no, that isn't true. There isn't equal access for everyone to every opportunity. And really, maybe what the fight is, maybe what is drawing all of this together, maybe what can encapsulate all of the protests is that what we're protesting for or against is the American dream. And maybe part of the problem is that the American dream we're told to sign on for isn't the American dream or even the American reality for many of the Gen Z and later millennials currently. And you would also argue, if you were going to look at this story of the American dream, that it's not the American dream that's turned out to be a reality for most of the millennials themselves. Because what we've seen over and over, over the last, you know, decades, is that the work that needs to be put in to access what we consider the rewards of the American dream, a home, a car, stability, financial comfort, takes a lot more work with fewer rewards, and that less and less people are actually able to cash in into what we think is the American dream. So I don't know how I've never thought about this, but I actually went in and started looking at what was the genesis of this whole idea of the American dream. Where was this coined, you know, this term. Where did it come from? So it actually, 1931, James Truslow Adams, not related to John Adams, actually coined the term American Dream. And this is basically kind of what he said, was that it's the dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone, with opportunity for each according to their ability and their achievements. It's not the dream of motor cars or high wages merely, but it's a dream of social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they can and are innately capable, and to be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of their circumstances of birth or position. That is not the American dream that we see in media or pushed by our corporate culture or supported in our educational institutions today. That's an American dream that's much more closely tied to what were the original origins in our Constitution, talking about pursuit of happiness, which was much more of a spiritual happiness rather than a material happiness. And James Adams, when he was developing this idea of the American dream, lamented, and one of the reasons he wrote this or wanted to talk about this actual American dream, was he lamented at the time the excesses of the 1920s, and that he saw a lot of focus on money making and material improvements that did not reflect the original documents that were more the Constitution, that were more about equality, spiritual values, quality of life, and that we were luring with our original American dream promised by the Constitution, luring tens of millions of people to our shores to pursue their spiritual identity and their opportunity for community. So how did we get to where we are today? There is the American dream in the ideal. If you look at the Oxford Dictionary, the definition of the American dream is the ideal by which equality of opportunity is available to any American, allowing the highest of aspirations and goals to be achieved. And it's so important to keep focusing on that, because if you looked at the American dream as we see it today, advertised, it would be about attaining a home and a car and maybe a second home and luxurious vacations, traveling abroad, maybe getting a yacht, working towards a private jet, living in a gated community, having the highest level of education at an elite university, wearing designer clothes, and having comforts that are never diminished. And that's a pretty lofty American dream that really is only accessible to a very, very small portion of our culture. And so I'm thinking about these things. And on Saturday night, my daughter Kelly said, okay, Mom, I want you to watch this movie. Let's stop, watching the news. And I want you to watch this movie on the basis of sex, which is the story of Ruth Bader Ginsburg early on in her career, when she goes to Harvard Law and she's married with her family, and her rise to notoriety by her first court cases in front of the Supreme Court. And what kept coming up during that movie was a quote that really kind of solidified where I am this week. And this quote was actually from constitutional scholar Paul Freund. And he said that the court should never be influenced by the weather of the day, but inevitably they will be influenced by the climate of the era. And that's when it clicked for me. Because for Generation Z, the America that they live in today is not the America that's being protected by our current institutions or education systems or our current American dream that's fueled by this corporate culture and the propaganda that the media pushes, that we all should be working much harder for less rewards. And that if we're not achieving a car and a home and a second home and, all the material goods, then somehow we as individuals are failing the American dream, and not that the institutions of our culture are failing us. And one of the things that came up in the conversation was, what does this new dream actually look like for Gen Z? If it's not about the material goods, if it's not about achievement and career accolades, what is it? And we were able to kind of define it down to these areas: social justice, economic justice, sustainable living, peace, health, and joy. And so that's where we're going today, in my mind. I'd like to invite in my guest hosts, David Gudiel and Aaliyah Sade. Welcome back, guest hosts. How are you?
Hello, hello. Hi, Professor. We're doing good today. Sorry, I was just moving a little. Today, what's been on my mind?
Yeah, after hearing all that.
We're going to talk about today the new American dream and what that means for our generation, given the context of what's currently going on. And with that, we also wanted to discuss a bit about what happened last week in San Luis Obispo with the protests, the protesters and things like that. So that's kind of what we're going to go a bit today. I'm David Gudiel. I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm a yoga lover, artist, joy bringer, San Diego local, recent Cal Poly grad in psychology and ethnic studies.
And I'm Aaliyah Sade. I use she, her, her pronouns. I'm a recent graduate of UCLA in World Arts and Cultures Arts Activism and a minor in Global Health. I am a full spectrum birth worker, a certified yoga instructor, a skater as of recently, a joy bringer, a lover, a sister, a daughter. And I'm really, really excited to talk about the American dream today, because I feel like for someone like me living in a Black body, I mean, it always has left us out. And I think it's a perfect topic to acknowledge that exclusion that's implicit in the liberty that we've seen, I guess we've seen expressed through the American dream, and like the propaganda that it's been to kind of keep people in the system of working and working and working.
So I'm excited to see where this takes us today. Although we won't be opening the phone lines, if you have a comment or question, you're welcome to call in at 805-549-8855. And you can always contact me by sending an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows. If you missed any this month or missed any along the way, visit kcbx.org. and look for Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can podcast our show by visiting Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcast. Search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and our show will be uploaded for you to listen to at your convenience. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, to keep up with the show and any new topics. And if you'd like to leave a message there, I'm happy to respond. And if you'd like to follow Aaliyah or David on their Instagram, David, your Instagram.
My Instagram is, mine is DGUDIEL18, so DGUDIEL18 on Instagram.
And mine is at the Aaliyah Sade, TheAaliyahSade.
And we will take a quick break and come back and start this conversation. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist with my guest hosts, David and Aaliyah. And we're talking about the American dream. And I just want to throw the quote out there. again, so we can kind of center ourselves, because I think that's kind of at the essence of what we're talking about. What maybe the, if we could wrap all of the protests and the issues into one kind of idea, is that the courts, so we're talking about how we make change, because we need to have social change, institutional and systemic change in this country before we're able to really offer any sort of American dream or opportunity for all. And so this quote was from constitutional scholar Paul Freund, that the court should never be influenced by the weather of the day, but inevitably they will be influenced by the climate of the era. And I think my argument and our argument today is that the climate has already changed, that the America Gen Zs and late millennials and even all the millennials are living in is already a different America. It's a different America than we are seeing protected by institutions and systems. It's a different America than the corporate media wants to keep pumping out there, which is about material goods and accessing higher education and always trying to consume and consume and go into debt. The America that Gen Z and the millennials are living is about a different American dream, which revolves around social justice, economic justice, sustainable living, peace, health, and joy. And so now the protesters really, if you listen carefully, are trying to get the courts to recognize that the climate is different, and they need to start passing laws and upholding laws that reflect the current America that young people are living in. All right, David and Aaliyah, where do you want to go with that?
Well, I would first like to introduce someone that we brought in for today's show, who is also part of the Gen Z. Aaliyah and I are more on the cusp. Since Gen Z starts at 1995 and we're both 1997, we kind of feel like we get that cusp in with the millennials. But our friend here is a bit younger, so she is one. So I'll let her introduce herself and then we'll go from there.
Hello. My name is Jen. I'm 17 years old. I'm from National City in South and Central San Diego. I'm a student, and I'm a compañera, my sister and a daughter.
And we kind of had the pleasure of watching Jen Michelle grow up and organize within our community. We went to high school with her older sister, and, you know, within that, we kind of just saw her coming into her own power, and we see that with her, like, you know, young femme-led publication that she has called Plática, which just means like dialogue in Spanish. And also she's been doing a lot around food justice within San Diego. If you'd want to talk more about that, Jen.
Okay. So Plática, it's just in its beginning stages, but hopefully within the next 5 months, it can be a broader, more tangible and accessible publication, and will be open to a lot more people. But I'm still in the process of organizing it, and I haven't even gotten the first issue out, but it's me having that conversation with folks and coming up with content and making those connections. But yes, Plática is a publication. It's going to be a magazine, among other things, where it's going to be a platform used to hold conversation and to share perspective with one another. I feel that's really important in our community and in the relationships that we have, that we're sharing ourselves with one another and sharing the things that we struggle with or the things that we enjoy doing.
So just at 17, that's the lofty goal to put together a publication. What got you interested in any sort of social activism? What is your background? How did you leap in?
I'm sorry, I don't think I heard the end of that question.
I'm just curious what got you started doing social justice. Why would you want to do this publication? What is your interest in activism at such a young age? Because most 17-year-olds that I know are thinking about driving, you know, getting their license and hanging out with their friends. So you're taking on some pretty big issues. What inspired you?
Well,
I think you got slowed down a little bit. I'm going to come back to Jen as we continue our conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today, our last week of BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month, we are kind of wrapping things up with David and Leah, and the perspective, as David mentioned, they're kind of on the end of the millennial generation and the new Gen Z. And part of what we've been talking about all month is the different lens and perspective that the younger generation has today, that their goals and their opportunities and actually their own vision of what a quality of life looks like is much different than what we have recognized and kind of been pushing for the last 100 years. And so I thought today would be interesting to talk about how the American dream is shifting. Because if we don't understand what it is we're actually working for, what is that goal? When we throw something out like we're here for the American dream, you know, people who come to this country are coming here for the American dream. Those of us who have raised children, you know, want them to achieve the American dream. And so for my generation and having raised children who are now 34 and 24, you know, we were kind of in that idea of the United States being a meritocracy, that if you put in your efforts, if you put in your work, if you studied hard and got good grades and took those AP classes and played sports and did volunteer work, you'd get into a great university. And if you got into that great university, then that was really your ticket, your opportunity to get good employment. And that good employment was going to be what was opening the doors for you to buy a home, to own a car, to go on vacations, to access material things, to live a life of comfort. But it's become apparent over the last 10 years that this meritocracy is failed in many ways. In the first place, the meritocracy doesn't recognize that just by virtue of being white in this country or having parents that went to college or having, you know, grandparents that were able to pass down a wealth generation to generation, that you were already ahead of the game, that my children, that their peers were already kind of up a few notches of the ladder of success towards the American dream. And that although they did work incredibly hard and they took those AP classes and they got into good schools, for their friends who didn't come from the same background, from BIPOC community members or from members of the LGBTQ community or lower socioeconomic status, that they were starting on a lower level of the ladder of meritocracy. And so their climb up to reach those good jobs or good educations and then step into the American dream were less and less available. And it's become even more apparent as we move into this huge economic inequality, that those who even have had a leg up in the meritocracy, that have had more opportunities to get into better schools, to get into better jobs, it's taking more work and longer hours and higher educations to even achieve the basics of our American dream of owning a car, owning a home, going on vacations, living a comfortable life. Because this generation, the millennials and the Gen Zs, are now leaving school, they're starting the American dream crushed by debt and crushed by less than equal opportunities. And so what we've seen is now this shift away from and a questioning of, is the materially based corporate dream something that actually is attainable? But is it even of interest? Because what we've seen with the rise of the American dream is also a rise of mental health issues, depression, anxiety, eating disorders, suicide rates are skyrocketing. You know, something is driving this, and we keep trying to solve these issues by throwing more mental health care in or starting suicide hotlines or, you know, providing more care for children so parents can go back to work. But it hasn't changed the uptick in mental health distress and issues of quality of life. And so maybe really what the problem is not the people or the individuals not working hard enough to achieve the American dream. Maybe really what the problem has been all along is that the American dream itself is toxic and not healthy and not attainable. And we had lost David and Aaliyah for a moment, so I did a little monologue, but I'm glad to see you back. And so let's jump back in. I had asked Jen, and I asked the two of you, what inspires your activism? What is it that gets you out there on the streets or wanting to start a publication and a dialogue?
I'll let Jen finish up. So you go, Jen.
Yeah, to pick up where I left off, it definitely has to do with my mom and the scene that she brought us up in. But I mean, also the way that we grew up in general with our family and our parents. And I think the people that everyone that I've been around and everyone that I've come into contact with and everyone that all of my peers and my teachers and friends of friends and family friends, I don't know, situations, experiences that I've learned from, I think just everything, really everything. I've always been really, it's always been really important to me the way that people are, to put it simply. And I don't know, I feel that I'm a student and I feel like I really learn from everybody and I learn from myself and everything that I've had to deal with and everything that I've been lucky enough to have, you know? So I think that I want to go from there. And I write, you know, so.
So what is the change that you'd like to bring about? Because you talked a lot about being an influencer inspired by your mom. So I'm assuming she's been modeling activism for you.
Yeah, she definitely has. And I don't know. I think it's just what a conversation is, you know, and being able to engage with somebody and to really talk about things and to really care for the other person and whatever it is that they feel and what they have to say, even if it's just you listening, you know, or even if you just get to have a look at what somebody is a part of, you know, and what their home life is like and what their family's like or how their walk to school is, you know, or their local liquor store or their friends, you know, and what they engage with and what they talk about and what's important to them. Because I feel like it's all very linked, you know, it's all very connected in the work that we want to do, which is creating like self-sustainable communities.
Self-sustainable communities. So, Aaliyah, talk about that, because last night on the phone you mentioned the project is Refrigerator Project. Did I remember
project
that correctly?
Fridge Project.
Tell us about that.
Well, the Fridge Project is something that we've seen circulating the internet this past month. We saw it in Oakland first and then in L.A. and New York. And I know that there are other cities in the U.S. that are doing this. And I'm sure that this concept is something that has been thought up and that has been executed. But I feel like it's getting a lot of attention now because of the pandemic and because of, I mean, there's always been this major need for food security and accessibility. But I feel like our needs and our issues are given a platform right now in a really big way, and these cities are linking up with each other, and these individuals in these communities are talking to each other and organizing because everybody wants to get involved and everybody wants to help. And this
So what is the refrigerator project that we're talking about?
It's getting these fridges. Either people donate them or people donate the money to buy them. And you're going around and asking businesses or property owners to host these fridges, and then the community is filling them with food, and it's for everybody. It's open 24/7, and anybody can take what they need and leave what they don't, you know?
So how does the Refrigerator Project, which I love this idea, making food accessible, it kind of reminds me of the little libraries that have popped up in neighborhoods where people can exchange books. Now we're talking about food and food deserts. So how does this reflect the American social culture that you're hoping to see as you grow up, the three of you?
I think it's about being reliant on your community, you know, and on that care and that mutual aid and that solidarity that we all can provide for one another instead of corporations and capitalistic operations, you know? So, I mean, that's the dream. And this is a really smart way to do it. This is really well-rounded, and we're being as organized as possible about this. And a lot of people care, and a lot of people are really excited for that. So that just goes to show our capability, you know, and who we are as a community.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying. Go ahead, David. I was just going to say that it sounds like we're stepping outside. It's almost as if there'll be one American dream driven by kind of the corporate propaganda that you need to consume and consume and buy and buy. And now there's this whole other American dream that's outside of the corporate structure, like Jen's talking about, being reliant on the community and each other and providing for each other.
Yeah, give you space for that. You're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm David Gudiel here with
Alia Shade
and
Jen.
And we're taking over the mic for the reluctant therapist during the BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month, so last week. Although we aren't taking live calls, you can share your comments or ask a question by calling 805-549-8855. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back to continue the conversation. Hello, you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, where David
and Alia
sitting in for the reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett, and then today we are exploring the new American dream. So I'll start off a little bit with my perspective and experiences. So when I think of the American dream, the same image Professor talked about in the beginning of the hour, just white picket fence, small house. And the way to do so, to get a house and get a car and your family for the vacations, is to go to school. That's the way you got to do it. You go to school and it opens up the pathway to have access to these things. But even in the way that we shape our education system is really in tandem with the capitalistic society expectations, which is put your head down, take orders, remember these things and go. And the beginning of when we started as a country developing, it was during the industrial age. So education was really shaped around the hours of how can we put these children to work and supply for their families and come back and learn something. And then it got shifted into how can we teach them to do only a certain function so they can fit into the factory role and things like that. So as I'm thinking about, for me, the American dream now, my generation has witnessed two economic collapses in our lifetimes, and I'm not even 30 yet. I don't even have kids. So when I think of like the economy for a house, which is like almost the pinnacle of the American dream, I don't think that's attainable anymore to me. I don't see that. But what I do see is sustainable housing for me. What I do see is a place to live and a place to be with family. So I think of deconstructing that to its basic elements, but as I graduated now from Cal Poly, my mom was kind of the one who really brought back the American dream to me. And my mom is an immigrant from Mexico, and she came here for wanting a better life for herself, for her children, all these things. And Aaliyah and I have talked about it, how she views the American dream. Because I think for her, it's like, get a job so you can live in your house and be nice with your family. But, you know, I applied to jobs, and I'm not getting any. There are no jobs right now. So it takes this thing into like, well, what can I do? What am I looking at? What is there to do? And my mom is still stuck on me working, and I'm like, I want to collect my unemployment check for right now. If possible, get my gap year in, do something that I want for myself, and then go back into work, because it's a workforce that she doesn't see as a form of servitude, you know, serving these institutions or these money-making companies. You know, when we go to work, I'm not making all the money. The company owner, CEO, is making money, and the managers above me make the money, not me. So that's what I see, and I want to work for myself and provide for my family in a very sustainable way.
Well, and it seems like what you're saying is there's almost a conflict, not just in seeing two economic collapses and not trusting the system anymore, but then you have some pressure because your mom's saying, hey, I came here so you could benefit from this American dream. What do you mean it's not working anymore? Go to work. So you've got two things happening. So the pressure from your family that said, you've got to represent us, and you looking at the possibilities and saying they're not there.
Yeah, and the way I look at the way that the workforce is set up, it's really set up for, like you said, for us to go into debt to be attained to these things. Like, I think I always keep bringing it up. Coronavirus has shed a light on so many things, because when people aren't working anymore, and those that are privileged to be resting more, they start to realize more things. And I think that's what has led to so many of the protests. The protests, I think, have been a big sign on the lack of government help towards us, but the expectation for us to still provide, not only to ourselves, but to the larger corporate system. So when I say that, I'm talking about pharmaceutical companies. I'm talking about, you know, CEOs of like grocery stores. Like, how is it that Amazon is making billions of dollars when people are out of jobs and are filing for bankruptcy? It's these little things like that. So when I was saying about the American dream, is just, I'm deconstructing it. I don't want the White House, the white picket fence house, but I do want a sustainable living place. I want not a small picket fence, but a large picket fence with family, because as societal creatures, history has taught us that across so many cultures, there's intergenerational living communities. And that's what brings wisdom, and that's what brings more love into, and not separated. And I think the American dream is very much propped up on this thing of, you know, what serves us the best, and we have to get something new and shiny and fix it. And that disregards a lot of the times things that are old. So I think of the American dream also as a new form of loving our families, because it includes, like Ali and I have talked about, buying a complex in Mexico and building it up so we can have that secure financial thing with us. So that's a little bit about my American dream, like seeing it for what it is and deconstructing it to the bare bones and kind of rebuilding it back up.
And it's not as if you're rejecting wanting to work or have a home or to have a family, but it's what that home looks like instead of the little individual houses. I hear you saying it's more of a community, an old 60s commune sort of thing where everyone's working together for the betterment of the whole and not just the individual. And it sounds a lot like what James Adams coined in 1931, this idea of the American dream being an opportunity for all to reach their comfort, regardless of their circumstances, but also to the level of their abilities and personal expectations. And that's different than just one corporate story. Everyone might have a different vision of what that looks like. And Aaliyah, you know, what does that look like for you then? You know, where do you start with this dream?
I think when I envision the American dream, I know as a Black person that the American dream has always necessitated my death. And right now, we're literally seeing Black people dying, but we're also seeing Black people, especially Black women, too tired from working all week to have the energy and capacity to spend time with their children, to be able to homeschool their children while, you know, schools are closed during the quarantine. And we're seeing a world where people are
literally working from paycheck to paycheck and don't have the capacity to save, and there's no rent control, and people are working to live rather than working because they enjoy what they do. And it's almost as if we've been brainwashed into doing what will make you the most money. And I know for myself, when I am envisioning my American dream, I know that many sacrifices went into getting me to where I am today. And when I was in college at UCLA, I started off as a pre-med student. I thought I was going to be a gynecologist. I thought I was going to, you know, go to medical school and do that whole route of things. And then I realized that, you know, the idea of the Western medical industrial complex and big pharma and all of these institutions is rooted in an American dream and a vision of health and wellness that never really included me. It never really included Black, Indigenous, people of color. And it is also rooted in like this ableism. So it's like, if you have the ability or the capacity, then you can reach that much success. So what does it look like when someone doesn't want to give their entire self to the system or to school or to work? And I knew that I didn't want to give my entire college experience to drinking yerba mate and trying to stay afloat in these classes that were meant to weed me out. And I recognized that for me, the American dream is reproductive justice. And I grew up with a single parent. And when I talk about, you know, Black women who are so tired from working that they don't have the emotional energy to spend time with their kids, like, I really have so much compassion and space for my mother and people like her. My mother is a single parent, and she has, you know, she views herself as like very successful in the way that she's always had a roof over our head. She owns a car, she owns a motorcycle, she owns a lot of things, and she provides a lot of things for us. And but she also works 40 to 60 hours a week. And in doing so, she sacrifices her health and she sacrifices time that she would have to spend with her kids. And last night we were having a conversation and she was wondering why I would want to just, you know, accept being on unemployment since I can't get a job right now. She's like, you have to keep on looking and you need to work, kind of the same way that David's mom has been talking to him. And I am just like, I don't want to be a slave. If I'm going to work, I want to be able to enjoy the work that I'm doing and not feel obligated to do that work. And I think that my mom, she literally said that that was immoral and that she made sacrifices for me to be able to go to college and to have all these skills that I have. And now I need to go contribute to society with them in a way that fits into like the consumerism and the capitalism. And I think midwifery and birth work, which is what I want to go into, kind of operate completely outside of that. I mean, there are midwives who will attend a birth and provide prenatal care, and all they'll ask for is a trade. So say someone grows some corn or something, they can pay a midwife in corn and they can make sure that they have a safe delivery and prenatal and postpartum care. And I think that, you know, that type of the same thing that David was talking about, the same thing that Jen Michelle was talking about, in terms of having communities of care and sustainable, self-sustainable practices. Like, that's my American dream. And I know that I want to serve others. I don't want to work to be extremely rich or have so many things. I just want to be able to work on myself, have the time to enjoy my life so that I can show up as my best self in my community and give back to them, because that's what really, my community and like the stories I see in them, that's what really inspires my activism. That's what really inspires my life path.
And so again, I don't want people to listen and have it sound like you're rejecting, you know, any sort of connection to the culture, but it's a redefinition of what work looks like. Because I think that's really important. You know, if there are no jobs, you can try as hard as you want, but they're not going to be there. And so you have one or two choices. You either feel like you are somehow failing because you can't find work, or you have to say, then how do I do work? How do I serve others and myself? And still be giving back to society, but not necessarily on a corporate payroll. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah. I was gonna say, I think that I will go into a bit of transition a bit, but my last thought before we switch and transition is that I think that from the very start, the whole Constitution is about us pursuing what we want to pursue. And we as Americans have the right to define our dreams every single time. Even if it changes, we have the right to do that as a community and as ourselves. And what was imposed as the American dream in the 1930s is not what we have today. And we have to adjust to that. We have to adapt. I think of in terms of biology, like survival of the fittest, like we need to survive and we need to adapt with these changes and to the new generation. And if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm David Goudiel.
And Alia Shade.
And Elizabeth has opened up the space this month for us to share our perspectives and personal experiences as they relate to BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month and well-being.
Well, and I think I lost them for a moment. David, are you still with me? So we have...
Yes, I'm sorry. Today we're talking about the new American dream for Gen Z, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
All right. So yeah, you
just
said
the last couple...
You said you wanted to transition a little bit
for
our last... Yes, for our last 10 minutes, you wanted to transition to what's happening in San Luis Obispo, because I know your heart is here, having been a recent graduate. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about what happened in San Luis Obispo last week. My apologies for my slip-up last couple of minutes. I thought we'd lost the connection. So basically what happened in San Luis Obispo on Tuesday, 1 week ago, was that there was a peaceful protest that was led by BIPOC youth and Solidarity with Portland. And the whole thing about Solidarity with Portland is solidarity for Black Lives Matter. And one of the local organizers, her name is Tiana Arada, and Aaliyah and I have the pleasure to know her very well. She's one of my close friends. And the way that the event happened, I will speak from what I saw on a lot of my friends' stories. I'm not speaking as a person who was there, but seeing from a lot of the stories on the ground was that the peaceful protest led into the freeway for a while, and there was an incident where someone with a car tried to hit one of the protesters, and as the police was there, they decided they didn't do anything. They didn't chase the person down. And after that, people started to go against the driver and somebody broke the window. On the news or whatever report was released, it was that there was a child in there with, and a lot of people say there wasn't a child. At the end of the protest ended at Mitchell Park somewhere between 8 to 9 p.m. And as Tiana, who is a Black queer woman, was getting into her car, five police officers basically kidnapped her. They pulled her away very aggressively, and there's video evidence of that that was shared. And you can hear her, and I will say, you know, content warning, trigger warning, like police brutality and these things in case anyone is listening. She was claiming that she was not resisting at all, and she says it in the video, "I'm not resisting, I'm not resisting." They did not read her rights. When she was in the cop car, she asked, "Why am I being arrested?" The police said, "We don't know yet." So they were still trying to find reasons. Outside of her house, there was an unmarked vehicle waiting for her to get home. And she had recently went through a lot of harassment within the city, from people going to her house, yelling out slurs to her and her family and things like that. She was charged on five accounts, and two of them being felonies. And there was someone else who was also arrested that day for trying to protect her. Right now, they're looking at a lot of legal funds for her, and I'll explain how to help. But what's important about this is that we must protect Black women. And this is, you know, my call to action to those that are listening today, because, you know, there is a district attorney. His name is Dan Dow, and he's elected by the people. So if the people of the community are saying to release Tiana, to drop her charges, it is our duty, it is our right to say that, because at the end of the day, the police are supposed to protect the community. And if the community is saying that she is not a threat, and she's actually leading them and supporting them and advocating for those that, like, for those lives that are being disregarded as less, it kind of just goes to show what we have. So that's kind of what happened a bit on Tuesday. And, you know, if you want to contact the district attorney, Dan Dow, his email is dow@slo.ca.us. You can also contact Derek Johnson, the Slo city manager, because they're in charge of hiring the police chief, the Seoul Police Chief and the council doesn't do that. And if you want to contact Derek Johnson, his email is djohnson, so J-O-H-N-S-O-N at slowcity.org. You can also contact the Slow City Council and ask them to fund Care Not Cops. And you go.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we had talked also about trying to have some of the members of the San Luis protest group and Tiana on with you today. And what happened when you reached out? Because I think that's very much a part of what's going on.
Well, when I tried to reach out to personally to Tiana, she said that she couldn't do it. And I believe it's for her mental health and care and protection, and which is very important. You know, I think that a lot of the times it's important to recognize the experiences of BIPOC or to think about that, because for her experience as a Black woman to get taken by five cops, we have seen too many times on the internet what can happen or where that leads or how she easily could have become a hashtag. So I recognize that when we asked her, like, I messed up. I was like, dang, like, I didn't think about that. But as soon as she reminded me, you know, that's re-triggering her trauma, re-asking for that. So it's about, you know, maybe not asking her how she can talk, but for us asking how we can show up for her. And that's what we've been able to do as much as we can, sharing it with people. If anyone is listening and would like to, when we talk about these things, BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month, this is one of the issues. Police brutality with Black women is an issue. And how can we support? We can support by contacting the district attorney, who is elected by people in the city, people who are listening right now. We can contact the city manager. If you think that you want to do more, you can also donate financial things to her GoFundMe. If you look up Justice for Tiana on GoFundMe, that's another way to do it. It has more information of her story. Google on the papers, a Slow Tribune. All of these things are online. So when we have a radio show, we have these calls to learn. You know, learning is not just one-time experience that just stays on our ears. Learning is also with action. And one of these actions is to show up for people like Tiana and to protect them and to call who we can call and put pressure, because at the end of the day, this is just like the American dream. We have the right to fight for that. We have the right to define what community and safety looks like in our communities, not just a group of people that we pay for them to do those decisions. You know, it's things like that. Do you have anything else to share, Aaliyah?
Yeah, I'm really sending my heart out to all the organizers and protesters out in San Luis Obispo right now. I mean, I've seen the Facebook comments around this situation, and I can completely understand why when we were reaching out to have, you know, folks from our age group who we've been organizing and protesting with come speak on the air, they were afraid to do so. And they didn't have the capacity to do so. And we really have to think about, you know, making space for compassion in these communities of care that we're building. It doesn't matter, you know, we have people who are listening from so many different backgrounds. And I imagine that maybe everyone doesn't agree with how events went. But regardless of any of that, we can extend that care and create a community where, you know, folks don't feel like they have to leave town or they can't come to their own home or they can't come onto the radio, when really all we're fighting for is our little piece of the American dream as well.
And so how will you know if you've achieved it? What does your life look like in the new American dream?
Do you want to go first, lady? Do you want me to go first?
When I think of what my life will look like, I know that I will have time to be free. I think that that's how I know I will have achieved the American dream. It won't be defined by where I live. I'm seeing now a like burgeoning housing crisis, and I'm seeing now people unable to pay their rent. So I'm not really concerned about what space I'll be in. It might be a bus, it might be a van, it might be a tiny house like the one we're in right now. But I know that I'll be there for my community, and I'll be showing up, and I'll be speaking up for folks who cannot use their voices, and just showing up for myself and our vision and making it true through the work that I do.
And I think for me, it'll feel like I don't wake up in the morning and I dread what I have to do. because I've lived those jobs, I've worked through those times, and for me, the American dream will look like laughter, will look, sound like laughter, feel like my cheeks hurt from being in the sun all day. It will feel like when I go to sleep, I don't even want to sleep anymore because I'm living the dream. That's what I want. I want it to feel in my body. For me, the American dream, well, not mostly, it will have materials, but I want the American dream to feel in my gut, like I'm falling from a roller coaster every single day. When I look at my fiance, when I look at my dog, when I look at the kids that we'll one day have in the house that we'll live in, wherever we live, I feel that it's not a destination, but a direction. You know, it's kind of like when Angela Davis says, freedom is a constant struggle. So that's kind of what I imagine the American dream to look and feel like.
I want to thank the two of you for giving of your time over the last month to share your perspectives. And I hope that this is a beginning of a partnership that we'll be able to collaborate again in the future. And in a short amount of time, final thoughts.
What do you think? I think final thoughts is the American dream was made a long time ago, put on today, is no longer there, and it is our job and duty to shape a new American dream that leaves no one behind and, you know, fills us with happiness and joy and teaches us about community and resilience.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I just want to say thank you to Elizabeth for, you know, sharing this platform with us and really helping us to cultivate these topics and share our truths. And I hope that we get to work together in the future again as well.
We will. And for anyone listening, you can reach us all by sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Follow me on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, or on Facebook. I'm happy to pass along messages to David and Nalia. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'll be back again next Tuesday at 2.